Good evening. It's Tuesday evening, May 13th. Trevor Feldman's here. Tonight's cheer is sponsored by Bonnie and Jack Isaacovitz to commemorate the yard site of Jack's mother, Begaleya Bas Avram Yaakov.
Good evening. Slowly my speech from Mashon Hara tonight. What else is new? It's a topic which has a couple of connections, since we're still running off the energy of Moshe's Kedoshim, which could last several months if we wanted it to. And it's also a little bit of a Bahar topic, because Anos Devarim is certainly closely linked with Rosh Hashanah. And it's also Sphere, when we try to focus on how we treat each other. So for all the above reasons, thought it might be Kedai again to speak to Rosh Hashanah. Now, Rosh Hashanah is a fascinating topic. It's a uniquely Jewish concept in a number of ways. One way in which this is true is that it seems to straddle the fence between something which is a prohibition in terms of an action and something which seems to direct itself towards a midah, towards a personality trait. And in order to investigate that, I'd like to start with a kasha, which we'll just keep in mind, and then we'll come back to this. There is a Rashi in the beginning of Parshas Shlach that makes an observation that Parshas Shlach is connected to Parshas Baroscha. Baroscha goes right into Shlach, and Rashi quotes from the Chazal the question of why is it that the Parsha of the Meraglim comes immediately after the Parsha of Miriam, which is one of the prominent juxtaposition questions in Parsha Shlach. The other is the question of why the Parsha of Chala is after that, known as Ketz Meraglim Lefnei HaChala. But Meraglim after Miriam is a question that Rashi discusses. And the answer that Rashi gives, in the name of Chazal, is that it's to make the point that here Miriam spoke badly about Moshe, and she was punished. So Meraglim, they should have learned the lesson. And it's a difficult point, because it sounds like it's a Kal Vachomer. Like, what Miriam did was bad, and what they did was worse. And it's difficult, because Miriam spoke about a person, and they spoke about the land. So the land, as holy as it is, doesn't have feelings, doesn't have emotions, can't get hurt, so it seems that it would be worse to speak about a person. Now, you don't have to take my word for it, but the Gemara in the Sefer Derechin, which says, how do you know the Lashon Hara is bad? Because Mikha Kalvachomer from the Meraglim. The Meraglim only spoke about eights and Yavanim, about sticks and stones, and still they got in trouble. So you can imagine how bad it is to speak about people. So that's the attitude we would have had, that it's a Kalvachomer in the other direction. And here, the Sarashi is a little hard to understand, that the Meraglim, they should have learned from Miriam, sounds like what they did was worse. So in order to try to understand this a little bit, so we should take a step back, perhaps, and try to understand what is the nature of Lashon Hara as a concept. Is it an issa? Is it a prohibition, which we'll have to define in absolute legal terms, such as don't hurt someone through speech or put someone at risk through speech? Or do we say that it's an issa midos, which the pasuk a little bit sounds like, lo shelech rachil, don't be this type of person, don't be a gossip, don't walk around telling stories. So how do we understand the prohibition? Is it a prohibition of action, or is it a prohibition of personality? Is it a character trait? And this question is not really local to this. This is a broader question in general as to whether there is such a thing as a character trait prohibition. There are those who understand within the Rambam, for example, that the Torah doesn't address directly how to be. It doesn't tell you what type of person to be, even though we're obviously interested in what type of person you are. But we assume that, perhaps a misunderstanding, that we can only instruct actions. We can tell you what to do. Do this, don't do that. And the hope is that that will indirectly affect who you are. But the idea that we can tell you don't be a jerk, that perhaps doesn't exist in a law book, in a code of principles of behavior, maybe we don't have such a thing. So it could be that the Rambam, at least, or Ben Yonah might disagree. Ben Yonah, as some have proven, seems to be more open to the idea of directing midos, while the Rambam perhaps would only see it as a possibility to address actions. So, for example, the Rambam has a statement in reference to Lashon Hara that there is a concept in Lashon Hara called Avak Lashon Hara, which we might translate as second degree Lashon Hara. It's Lashon Hara even in the Torah, it's prohibited just as much, but it's out of remove. It's really second degree. The Gemara says that's what we all violate. Kulan Bavak Lashon Hara. Everyone's in violation at least of second degree Lashon Hara. And an example the Rambam gives says, let's say I say something that sounds like it's nice about somebody, but really I have the intention that it should come out in an insulting way. I make it sound like I'm trying to say something nice, but I know that it's going to have a negative impact. So Rambam says that's second degree Lashon Hara. So some of the commentaries ask, that's second degree? That's worse. I would think that that's a worse form than normal Lashon Hara. That's Makarei Ubesesi, you're hitting the guy from behind. If you're at least upfront about what you're saying, it's okay, so we know what you're trying to do. But if you're going to pretend to be nice and really do it with the intent to be hurtful, I would think from a Midos perspective, that's a lot worse. So there are those who explain it by Ehrman, who has a Sefer, his Sefer in English also, his Sefer in Hebrew as well, about Bernardo Machavero concepts called Kodesh Yisrael. So he explains over there that we can't really gauge the halacha from what's worse from a Midos perspective. We have to have a format of the Isser. The Isser is to hurt someone through speech. And therefore, if it deviates from the format, if the sentence looks like it's a positive sentence, so then that puts it at a second degree. The fact that from a Midos perspective, it's worse. Yeah, true. But from a legal perspective, we have to look at the action, and we have to work from there. So if it deviates from the standard format of the prohibition, then it's going to be at a, it's going to be at a remove, it's going to be second degree, we'll call it avak. While others might disagree, others might say that we can look at this as a Midos prohibition and we can work from there. So this issue of whether Lashon Hara is primarily an issue of Midos or whether it's a straight legalistic concept, don't hurt someone through speech, so this could perhaps manifest itself in a number of issues. For example, there is a loophole for Lashon Hara. Before we get too excited, the poskim are very, very limited in how it's applied, extremely limited in how it's applied. At least in theory, the Gemara says in Maseches Erchin that there is a loophole that's known as Apei Tlasa. That if something is known publicly, Apei Tlasa literally means in front of three, that if three people know about it, so it's considered to be public knowledge, and then it's not prohibited to repeat it. And again, the poskim are very, very limited in how this applies. It doesn't mean that if it's known in front of these three people, I can tell it in California. It has a lot of limitations as far as what that means. But just strictly speaking, just to deal with the Gemara, it sounds like if something is public knowledge, there's no prohibition, Lashon Hara, I can repeat it. Tosfos on the side of the page radically limits it. Says Tosfos, we're not talking about bad Lashon Hara here. We're talking about good Lashon Hara. Now, it sounds like a contradiction in terms. Sounds like a steer, a good Lashon Hara. So there is a concept of good Lashon Hara. The Gemara says, one of the best things I could say about anybody, take my word for it, is he makes a great steak in his house every night. But if I tell people that, so he might not appreciate it. Because even though I had a good meal with him last night, now tonight he's going to want to sit down to a quiet dinner by himself. 5 minutes in, there'll be a knock at the doorbell. It'll be Reuven. Reuven says, yeah, it was just in the neighborhood. Is that steak? And my friend will be like, well, you know, it's only enough for me, but why don't you come on in? 10 minutes later, another knock at the doorbell, it's Shimon Levi. Like, yeah, we were just walking to the steak. It's like, well, there wasn't enough to begin with, but sure, why don't you come on in? Pretty soon the whole town's over there eating his steak. So even though what I said was entirely positive, one of the greatest things you could say about anybody, still, it hurt him. It put him at risk, and he'd rather you don't say it. So says Tosus, when we say public knowledge, you can say it, that doesn't mean bad stuff. That means good stuff. The good stuff that you normally wouldn't say if it would be harmful to somebody. So then, if people know it already, then you can say it. But bad stuff, that you can't repeat even if it's public knowledge. So it's a big difference between the way the Gemara reads without Tosus and the way it reads with Tosus. And one could suggest that it's reflective of these two possibilities. That if the issue is hurting someone through speech, the legalistic view, so then you could say, listen, it's public knowledge, and you're not spreading it any further, so then you're not hurting. It's not nice. It's still gossipy. It still doesn't show an exalted character, but it's not harmful to the person. Well, Tosfos is apparently coming from the Midos point of view. Tosfos is saying that even if it's public knowledge, you're not adding any more damage. It's still not what we want you to talk about. It's still lo se lo rocho. It's still not the character trait that we're looking for. And the only time we're going to allow it is if it's both not harmful because it's public knowledge, and it's not bad either because it's positive. So perhaps from those differences we see these two possibilities. Another area in which you see it, an important concept that's all too neglected, there is a prohibition not only of speaking Lashon Hara, there is a prohibition of Kabbalah's Lashon Hara. We're not allowed to receive Lashon Hara. Again, very, very underappreciated prohibition. And this prohibition, the truth is, as much as unappreciated, it's hard to understand. Now, what exactly does it mean, you don't receive Lashon Hara? So it would be nice if the way it worked was people would come up to you and say, hi, I would like to tell you some Lashon Hara now. Do you elect to receive or reject? So then you could push the reject button and say, I'm not interested. But if we're going to say that life doesn't always work that way, then chances are you're going to hear it first, and then you're told in the prohibition to be makabalit. So what does that mean? So this is a topic of a machlokas between the Chafetz Chaim on the one hand, the famous authority on the matter, and the contemporary authority of Moshe Sternbach. And the issue was that the Chafetz Chaim understood it, that Kabbalah's Lashon Hara means that you're not allowed to believe it, even in your heart of hearts. You can take whatever measures, you have to take whatever measures to protect yourself. We call him Mechush Miboy. So if somebody tells you that he's a car thief, so you won't hire him as a valet parker, but you're not going to believe it. In your heart of hearts, you're not going to believe whatever you hear. And if Sternbach objected, if Sternbach said, well, let's get real. The Chafetz Chaim was a very religious man. So we're not all on that madrega. We have, the Gemara says, HaTorah lo nitna l'malachi ha'sharis. The Torah wasn't given to the angels. And if somebody, you've known somebody for 30 years, everything he's told you has always been true, so you're going to believe this too. So says the Sternbach, Kabbalah Lashon Hara doesn't mean that you're not going to believe it. It means that you're not going to act on it. You will treat the person the same way, again, assuming it's not an issue of protection. You will treat him the same way. You're still going to say hello to him in the morning. You'll still sit with him in the cafeteria, whatever it is. And whatever you're thinking is not going to matter as long as you treat him the same way. Right. If it's a question of protecting yourself, then you're going to have to act on the information. But if it's not an issue of your being at risk or anyone else being at risk, so then you're not going to treat them any differently, because if I tell you that 20 years ago this guy did something wrong, so you're not going to stop talking to him because you believe it. You're not going to, if it's not a question of safety, then you're not going to act any differently towards the person.
According to the time, you can't protect yourself
either. No, you can. But even when you protect yourself, everyone agrees you have to protect yourself. Yes, but even the Chafetz Chaim says that when you protect yourself, you're protecting yourself more out of suffix. Like you're saying, well, just in case it's true, I'll do this. Just in case he might be a car thief, I'm not going to hire him as a valet parker. But I'm still, in my mind, I'm thinking it might not be true. It probably isn't true, but I'll be safe and I won't do it. So Sternbach is a very high standard to live by. It's not really possible, and that's not what Kabbalah Lashon Hara means. So it could be that the issue here is really what is, again, Lashon Hara about? Is it about Midos, which sounds like what the Chafetz Chaim is saying, that you can't even enjoy it, so to speak, you can't be makabel it intellectually, mentally? And Sternbach seems to understand that it's more about not hurting someone through speech. So therefore, your job is not being makabel Lashon Hara means that you have to stop the person from being hurt because you heard it. So if you're not going to treat them differently, so then you stop it from taking effect, and that's your job in not being makabel Lashon Hara. This could affect an interesting question that is dealt with by the Shilas and Shuvas Tiros V'Yitzah. Mr. Zadna Kayizu, for example, hope you're mochel. So let's say I walk in. This is obviously fictional. I'm using somebody who there can't be any real Lashon Hara about. That's the point. But let's say... All right, so then the example will work for a second. We'll retract it afterwards. So let's say somebody has to walk into this room right now. doesn't know anything. He just he walks in breathless. He sits right over there, and he turns to the man behind him and says, "I just had to come in. I just heard the juiciest piece of Lashon Hara about Mr. Sandy Blodnik. I have no idea who you are, but you're the first person I saw, and you have to hear this Lashon Hara. I'm ready to tell you now." So now you have essentially three choices, but we're going to assume that the first one is not even on the table because you're too much of a tzaddik. So the first one is to say, "Jerk, I'm Sandy Blodnik." So you're not going to do that because it's too embarrassing to him. It's not the way you're going to operate. So that's not on the table. You have two other choices. Either you could say, "Sorry, I'm not interested in Lashon Hara. This is the rare opportunity we actually announced to people that I'm not interested. I don't want to hear." The other option you could say is like this. You know, this is a good opportunity for some profit here. Because it's not really Lashon Hara, because I presumably know what it is already. So maybe I should listen. Why should I listen? Not for any reason that you might guess. But why should I listen? Because the Gemara says that what's the greatest bracha, or what is the greatest baruch who really love? People who are insulted and don't insult back, they hear their disgrace and they don't respond. That's a tremendous mile. So they might think, I have a great opportunity here. I'll listen. And I won't respond. And I'll get this bracha of Ne'alav and Ve'en. Maybe I should take the opportunity. Since it's not really going to be damaging Lashon Hara because I know it already, maybe I should listen. So it seems like these two possibilities are the same issue, the Chafetz Chaim of Sternbach issue. That is it that you can't allow the intellectual, the mental process of Lashon Hara to take place, you have to cut it off? Or is it about hurting someone through speech, in which case you could say, well, it's about me, so it's not going to hurt anybody, so I could listen, and I could take the opportunity to get the bracha of Hanel Lav and Ve'enam Ol. In case this doesn't sound like a practical case, it's very practical for people who have secret identities. If you were a costumed superhero, so it can happen all the time, people will say something about you, not knowing that they're talking to you, and you'll have to decide, are you going to object or not? That's an important practical point. So this also could affect another issue. This is a very important whole realm here, and that's the question of Tolelos. We know that there are some times when not only are you allowed to speak Lashon Hara, but you're obligated to speak Lashon Hara. But if somebody else is at risk, if you or somebody else is at risk, so then you have to share the information that you have. So the question is, what's the mechanics of that? How does that work? You could see it two ways, which would correspond to the two ways that we've been discussing. Is the idea that Lashon Hara is about midos, and therefore it's about saying things for gossipy reasons? And here it's simply not Lashon Hara, because you're not saying it for gossipy reasons, you're saying it for practical reasons. So if you're saying it for practical reasons, as the phrase suggests, Tolelos, so then maybe it's simply not Lashon Hara. So that's why it's permitted and obligatory, because it doesn't fall into the definition of what we're talking about. Alternatively, you could say that, no, it is Lashon Hara, because maybe we should say, like we've been saying, that Lashon Hara is about hurting someone to speech. So if that's the case, you will certainly be hurting the person you're talking about. You'll be hurting him more than usual. You're intending to hurt him. You're intending to deprive him of a business opportunity or a shidduch or whatever it is. But it's overridden, it's overwhelmed by the fact that you have an innocent party that has to be protected. And we have a corresponding obligation of Lo Samar Al Damayecha, which, not coincidentally, is the other half of the same pasuk. Lo Selech Rachel B'Yamecha, Lo Samar Al Damayecha, which therefore one could suggest that these are two points in balance. Don't talk about people, but also don't stand by when somebody's going to be hurt. So maybe one counteracts the other. And even though, yes, it is Lashon Hara, you are hurting somebody, but it's outweighed by the fact that you're protecting an innocent party. So these two possibilities are relevant here to understanding what's going on. This could be relevant to a semi-psak of the Chofetz Chaim. The Chofetz Chaim has a comment which was very controversial. Later, Poskim didn't really accept it. Chofetz Chaim himself wasn't so sure about it. He has it as a thought in the footnote in the Chofetz Chaim. And he seems to suggest that, let's say you're shopping, and you see somebody in a store about to buy something, and you know that they could get it better across, they could get a better price across the street. It's not that they're being taken advantage of here, but they'll do better if they shop in the store across the street. So Chofetz Chaim leans towards saying, You're not allowed to tell them that. You're not allowed to tell them that this store is more expensive than the other store. So later, Poskim thought, what are you talking about? It's Koelis. You're telling him to save him money? It should be permitted. So, and again, with the caveat, the Chavetz Chaim himself didn't, I'm not so sure that it's prohibited, but he considers that it might be. So the explanation might be, based on what we're saying, but if we say the Lashon Hara is simply about midos, as long as you have some type of positive intent, then it's not Lashon Hara, then you're right. So you're saying it in order to save the money, so it should be with Koelis, and fine. But if it's about balancing the innocent party versus the person who you're talking about, so then it could be that sometimes it's a question of degree. You know, that if somebody's going to really be hurt by the person you're talking about, so then you have to talk about them in order to stop that damage from taking place. But in a situation like the Chavetz Chaim is describing, so maybe the scenario is, what are we talking about? So this guy will save 25 cents by going across the street, but everyone will leave this person's store, he's going to lose all his business, he'll close down, his family will starve. So maybe the damage that you could do to the person you're talking about might significantly outweigh the benefit to the person you're saving. And again, we predicated on the fact that it's not, let's say, taking advantage. It's not a real crime here, it's just a question of benefit. So you're trying to benefit somebody while hurting somebody else more. So maybe that, in such a case, maybe Torah doesn't outweigh the prohibition of Lashon Hara, but maybe that's a question of balancing the two. Koelis in general is really where everything, it's the whole area where everything is contained, and that's where all of the judgment exists in Hilchos Lashon Hara, all around this concept of Koelis. So the Poskim also discuss, I'll say the following case. I had a friend, his name was Shlomo Goldstein. So Shlomo Goldstein used to speak Lashon Hara all the time. And it destroyed his life. He just had a horrible life because everything he was doing was about Lashon Hara, and nobody wanted to hang out with him anymore. So it's important not to be like him. So of course Shlomo Goldstein doesn't really exist, and he's making him up. But if he really did exist, so would that have been mutter to use his name and to tell you about him so that you shouldn't be like him for the purposes of chinuch? So that's an issue Poskim debated, and it would seem to revolve around this question. If we assume that it's about midos, so then you could say that here again, I'm not doing it to be gossipy, I'm doing it to educate people, so maybe it should be permitted. But if it's about hurting someone through speech, so then you could say here, you really are hurting them through speech, I'm doing it because I'm trying to inspire my class, let me inspire them a different way. What right do I have to hurt this guy just so I can get a few extra aspects of inspiration? Maybe it's not worth it. Another question that's related to that is the issue that Klai Yisrael has already paskened on, but the poskim weren't so sure. But everyone assumes that this is mutter, except for the written tshuvas. So let's say you speak Lashon Hara, so to speak, but you leave out the name. Not in a way where people can figure out what you're talking about, because that's the same thing. So let's say in theory, you can actually conceal the identity. You can successfully obscure who it is you're talking about. So we all assume that that's mutter. That's what everyone does on a daily basis. But the poskim weren't so sure. And it seems to be, again, it's the same two possibilities. But if it's the issue of hurting someone through speech, so the names have been changed to protect the guilty. So you're not going to, the names have been omitted, so you're not going to hurt anybody. But if the issue is midos, so you could argue this is still an instance of gossip, it's still indulging this negative trait. And the fact that there's no victim, because nobody knows what you're talking about, may not mitigate that. And that's why the gossip columns will have things like, which famous person did such and such? So even if they don't say that, they get hung off from saying that such and such a thing happened. So maybe that's not the type of hana that we're advocating, even if the name is being left out. But let's combine the two cases. Let's say I were to say to my class, I have a friend, I'm not going to tell you who he is, but he destroyed his life by speaking Lashon Hara, and you shouldn't be that way. So then presumably everybody would say that that's mutter, because it has both sides. It's not hurting anybody because we left out his name, and it's not done for enjoying gossip. It's done in order to inspire. So then perhaps we could say that that should be, according to both possibilities, permitted. This could also be related to a question that's a very central historical question that you may have heard. There was an issue with the Sefer Chafetz Chaim, and a number of books relate this point, that the Chafetz Chaim, when it came out, so an older contemporary of the Chafetz Chaim was the Bisal Shalanta, and Bisal Shalanta was the founder of the Muslim movement, as the person who really promoted the study of topics like Lashon Hara. So one would assume that the Sefer Chafetz Chaim would be right up his alley. This would be something he would think was wonderful. And the truth is he did. We have other indications that he was very enamored of the Sefer. But he declined to write a Haskama. That the Chafetz Chaim asked him to write an endorsement of the Sefer, and he refused. Why did he refuse? He said that there's one sack in there that I can't endorse, I can't sign my name to. I'm afraid if I write a Haskama, people will think I agree with him. So his Talmidim asked him, Rabbi, why don't you write the Haskama anyway? And you'll say, I put a little footnote there, that on page 326 there's a plaque which I think is wrong, I think it should say this one. So he responded that nobody reads the Haskamas anyway. So they'll see my name at the front, they'll think I endorse everything, and they won't know that I don't endorse this psak. So clearly this is something he was very concerned about, the psak that he really felt he didn't want to lend his name to. So what was the issue that was so fundamental that he didn't want to be associated with, even Mishafek, he only went to think he was endorsing? So the Chafetz Chaim sounds like he's saying the following. Now there's a little bit of debate whether he really means this or not. But based on the Ben Yona, he sounds like he's saying the following point. That the pastor called this the case of Joe. You have Joe. Joe's a very happy man. Joe's sitting at home in his easy chair with his widescreen TV and a big soda and a bag of pretzels. Very happy man. Joe gets a phone call from his friend, Irving. Irving's been his best friend for 25 years. Irving says, Joe, listen, I got to talk to you. I've been going to these beginner Judaism classes. So I found out there's a prohibition that apparently I'm not supposed to say bad things about people. Didn't know that. Then I went to next week and I found out that if you do something wrong to somebody, comes Yom Kippur time, you have to ask them for forgiveness. Didn't know that either. So, here's the story. Now, for these 25 years that we've been friends, I've been telling people that I don't really like you, and I think you're obnoxious, and I think you're pathetic, and I think your jokes aren't funny, and you're annoying, and I just hang around with you because you pay for lunch, but I really don't like anything about you. But, I'm sorry, and I hope you'll forgive me. So, Joe's a nice guy, so he's probably going to forgive. But we know that when he hangs up the phone, he's a lot less happy than he was when he answered the phone. So it sounds like from the Sefer Chafetz Chaim that you're supposed to do that. Sounds like it. Sounds like that if you spoke Lashon Hara about somebody and they don't know about it, even so, you have to ask them for mechila. You have to go through this process. I read the Shal Salantis and Chas V'Shal. How could you do that? We know from this week's parasha that there's a prohibition of Anas Devarim. You're not allowed to hurt somebody's feelings with speech. So in order to clear your chest, in order to take care of your spiritual accounting, so you're going to devastate this guy, you have the right to do that. So he was very opposed to this ruling, and he didn't even want to give the impression of endorsing it. So this was a big question, Lahalacha, who's right on this point. Again, a number of tshuvas and others thought that maybe the Chafetz Chaim didn't really mean, and as blatant an example as we discussed, maybe he meant a case where the person was going to find out anyway, where he knows about it, he didn't know it was you, maybe not necessarily as blatant as what he described. Maybe the Chafetz Chaim would agree that if it was really something he never would have found out about, maybe he shouldn't tell. There was some debate about how much the Chafetz Chaim meant it. But in any event, it seems like the weight of halachic opinion seems to tilt towards the Bisal Shalanta around this point, that it's not right to ask Mechila in such a case. I think I remember reading as a child in the art scroll book about Rasul Shalanta, and the art scroll children's biography of Rasul Shalanta, I think it's there, that Varon Cutler was asked 100 years later, Varon Cutler was asked, how could Rasul argue on this track Chafetz Chaim is basing on Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah was a Rishon, so how could the source want to come and argue on him? So supposedly Aaron Cutler responded that Rav Yisrael Tanahu Palik. Rav Yisrael, the Gemara has an expression, Rav Tanahu Palik, that even though Rav was an Amora, he was on such a level that we treat him like a Tana, that he can argue on previous generations. Rav Yisrael Tanahu was such a Gon that he could argue on Rabbeinu Yonah. It was a throwback. He could take issue with his tzat. So then what do you do? So if you follow this ruling that you're not supposed to ask Mechila, so it's not a kula, it's a chumra. He's saying that you don't have this avenue in order to do tshuva. So what do you do? So it could be you're stuck. It could be that really an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, that maybe there is no tshuva for this type of lashon hara. Others suggest that maybe we do have to find different avenues. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik has in a sefer on Sefer Mata, Parach Mata Aaron, where he relates this whole story there in that sefer. And he writes that he should try to counteract it, he should try to spread positive information to try to undo the damage. Even though we all know the famous muscle about the pillow and the feathers, but you can't really undo it. But nonetheless, you try to do the impossible, you try to outweigh it, try to counteract whatever damage that you've done. And others suggest, Rabbi Warman has this in a sefer, and others have this in a sefer, that this might be an opportunity to take advantage of a situation that's normally not ideal. The way we have things nowadays, certainly in elementary school, is that Erev Yom Kippur, so everybody walks around kind of on autopilot saying, Yemochumi, 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 and they're not really thinking about it at all. And that's not really the way it's brought down in the Svarim. The way it's brought down in the Svarim is that you're supposed to specify. If they say, listen, I did this to you, I hit you in the nose, and I realized that was a mistake, and I hope you're Yemochumi. And it's not supposed to be just a formulaic kind of thing. But because it did develop that way, some recommend that this is an opportunity so you can take advantage of that. So on every tip where you say you're Muslim for anything and you'll include this without specifying. Of course, if you mysteriously call them up on Purim and say, hi, I just came back from the Purim Spiel, are you Muslim? He's going to suspect something's up. So it only works on Erev Yom Kippur. It doesn't work any other time of the year. But because we have this social convention of walking around on Erev Yom Kippur asking for the so then that might be a suggestion.
Was true, right?
That's usually the definition of lashon hara.
Right. So what is he going to do now?
He'll have to try to outweigh it. You'll have to say that, first of all, there are some posts going to say that he could lie to undo it, because that maybe the prohibition of lashon hara outweighs the prohibition of sheker. We discussed in the past that sheker is not always an absolute prohibition, so it could be he has the right to say it wasn't true, even if it was true. But also, and this is a more complicated discussion, and when we say lashon hara is true as opposed to mechilas, I think there's often a thin line between them, and that lashon hara is often subjective. So it's true in the sense that you're not making up, you're not calling him a bank robber when he's not, but you're putting a spin on things that doesn't have to be the only way to see it, then you can usually counteract it. So that's one possibility. But this machlokas between Rav Yisrael Salanter and the Chafetz Chaim, however we paskin, however we resolve it, so it could be that this relates to the same issue. It could be that maybe the Chafetz Chaim sees it from a midos perspective, that it's about being nasty. So here, your whole goal is to try to reverse that nastiness. Now, you're going to hurt him in the process. That's unfortunate, but at least it makes some level of sense because you're coming from trying to reverse your nasty attitude. While Rabbi Yisrael Salanter will see it as hurting someone through speech, so therefore it makes no sense to hurt him through speech again or hurt him through speech worse in order to try to undo hurting him through speech. So you see a couple of different scenarios in which we seem to find these two perspectives, that either we're talking about a midos idea, or we're talking about an action of hurting someone through speech, and of course the link. Of course they go together. There is a mitzvah that the Ramban counts as a mitzvah minat Torah, one of the 613. We have an obligation to remember Maisha Miriam. And this idea of that Miriam spoke lashon hara about Moshe, so there's a specific mitzvah in the Torah to remember it. The Rambam doesn't list it, and the Ramban has a section in the back. The Ramban has a commentary on the Rambam's Sefer Mitzvahs, So in the back he has the mitzvah, he calls the mitzvah Shashachar HaRambam, mitzvah the Rambam forgot. A funny way of saying it, it's probably not the case that the Rambam was, you know, sitting at home and saying, oh, you should write this song, or whatever. Might say, set the printer ready, we'll leave it. And he didn't think these were mitzvahs. But the Ramban calls it mitzvahs that the Rambam forgot. And ironically, what did he forget? He forgot the mitzvah of Zechira. He got to say, Zechira's Egel Azav, the mitzvah he left out, and he left out Zechira's Meishim. It says the Ramban did. That's a real mitzvah. That should be one of the 613. He writes that in his commentary to Chumash, and he writes that in his commentary to the Rambam. Both places, this is a real mitzvah. We should encounter this. So, what is the mitzvah exactly? So the way the Ramban understands it is that you're about to speak Lashon Hara, boom, you should remember Miriam, and that should stop it. But it's a strange kind of thing, because there are a lot of prohibitions in the Torah. And it's not the case, I'm pretty sure, that every time you have a prohibition, you have a story about somebody who violated the prohibition and got punished, and an additional mitzvah to remember the story. So why is Lashon Hara so lucky? Why does this get specially singled out? So Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Sher, who was a Mashgiach in Slobodkis, he explains in the Sefer of Musa, Lechitzichus Musa, that Lashon Hara is a complicated territory. It's very hard not to violate it. We mentioned before Avak Lashon Hara, the second degree of Lashon Hara. So one of the other examples of Avak Lashon Hara is I could say something I mean for it to be nice, and it comes out in a hurtful way. So you could say, well, what do you want from me? Because the whole point is I thought it was nice. If you tell me not to be nasty, so I won't be nasty. If you tell me that even if I say something nice and it comes out nasty, the whole point was that I thought it was nice. So how am I supposed to prevent that? So says the Yitzchak Isaac Sher, that's why we have a prohibition, or we have a mitzvah rather, of remembering Miriam. That we have to remember that Miriam was a tzaddikus, and certainly meant well, one of our great role models in life. And even she tripped over Lashon Hara. So we're all susceptible. So what's the only eighth? So the only eighth is to be conscious of it, to be aware of it beforehand, to try to work on developing the midah that's not likely to incur the violation. If you just wait until the moment, then you're gonna violate it. So the only eitzah is not something you can just follow the rules and expect it to work out. By definition, it's not going to happen. The only strategy you have is to develop a personality beforehand that's not going to operate that way. And then you can hope that things will flow from that personality. And this is an idea that we find in halacha throughout. I like mentioning the example that we know that we have a practice Friday night, we recite Kiddush, so we cover up the challahs. So why do we cover up the challahs? And Talmud Yerushalmi, there's a couple of reasons. And the most interesting of the reasons is we cover up the challahs because we don't want to embarrass the challahs. So it's a very unusual idea. Right? As I like commenting, you know, the challahs will get over it, and what you do to them 5 minutes later is much worse. If you're not worried about what happens next, so this idea of not embarrassing them is a strange idea. So presumably the notion is, as we understand, that humans are complex, and you're not going to be able to deal with them unless you practice, unless you work on inanimate objects, and you take the opportunity to say, okay, how would a human being react if I would pass him over for something else? Like the idea is that the challah is going to be embarrassed because you're making kiddush over wine instead of the bread, so it's going to be offended, and you don't want them to see what's going on. So too, what if I was dealing with real people? What if I had to pass over one person for another? So maybe I might not realize that that's potentially hurtful unless I practice in advance. They say that the Aaron Cutler used to live on the Upper West Side and was driven to Lakewood regularly. They used to tell his drivers that they should dafka use the man toll lanes. They shouldn't use the automatic, they shouldn't use the easy pass, whatever it was then, the automatic toll lanes. Because he felt that a human being to be passed over for a machine would be very hurtful. I don't know if it's actually true, they really feel that way, but he felt that that was a concern. And that's the mentality you get if you cover your challahs, if you practice on inanimate objects, and then you become sensitive to people also. And that's it's an interesting theme, because you find that this issue of covering the challahs, there's a lot of literature about it. Somebody asked me once, why is it that we're so worried about the challahs scene, but we're not worried about the challahs here? That's all here was going on. So, we're not worried about the challah's hearing. They'll hear what's going on. They make the bracha a little bit different. So maybe the challah's like me. As soon as you turn the lights off, they go to sleep, and maybe they're not gonna hear what's going on. But it could be that maybe the point is not that they won't hear, but that this is a gesture of respect. You say, listen, I'm not going to do this in your face. I'm going to close the door for a minute. And at least that's a gesture of respect, and that's perhaps also valuable. And you find an interesting discussion that Poskim had about issues of covering the challah, which is all about this practice. Where Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about what if you're in a communal setting, you have a lot of tables, and there's one kiddush being recited in the room at one of the tables that you're not at. So you have to cover up your challah at your table also. So his first instinct is to say, well, because the issue of embarrassing the challah doesn't apply because kiddush isn't being recited at that table. But they said, well, maybe not, because maybe the cheshbon will be, well, why is kiddush not being recited here? It must be that there's a barker often being recited somewhere else. They'll still be offensive to the challah. That's pretty fancy reasoning for a loaf of bread. So again, the idea is not that the bread's really thinking this, but that the whole point of the zin is that we should be practicing and we should be thinking about how the scenarios play out. And that's part of what's going on here. That's also a problem. Right, that's part of it, that we don't know when we might be making these implications that are really negative through the way we're saying it, which is part of why we need to practice in order to avoid that, otherwise who knows how it's going to come out. So that seems to be the central message here, that the mitzvah of remembering Miriam is to tell us that we have to practice, to tell us that if we're not prepared in advance, so we're going to end up hurting people, otherwise it's just going to happen automatically. So that's probably what Rashi means in the beginning of Parshas Shlach. When Rashi says that the Meraglim, they should have learned from Miriam, doesn't mean that it's a Kal Vachomer that what they did was worse. No, what Miriam did was worse. But the message of Miriam is that if you want to avoid the pitfalls of Lashon Hara, you have to practice. You have to practice in inanimate objects. And for the Meraglim to run right away and indulge their instinct for Lashon Hara on the land, that's a complete betrayal of the message of Miriam. And therefore, that's what Rashi is telling us. They should have learned the lesson from Miriam. They should have realized that even great Satanios can mess up here. And therefore, we have to start practicing. And that's the synergy between the Midah and the Mitzvah and the action that this concept is emphasizing. So just to quickly chazer what we spoke about. So we spoke about the fact that there is this question whether Lashon Hara should be seen as a Midah issue or a Maisa issue. Maybe the Rambam doesn't acknowledge any Midah mitzvahs in general. We mentioned the fact the Rambam says that if you pretend to be nice and you're really being nasty, it's a Tabak Lashon Hara, even though the Midah is worse, but as far as the Maisa is concerned, it's at a remove. We mentioned the Heter of Apei Tzvasa, which also says only applies if you're saying nice stuff that could be damaging. So the Gemara sounds like it's an issue of avoiding damage, while Tosfos sounds like it's an issue of both avoiding damage and not indulging the Midah. And we talked about the issue of Kabbalah's Lashon Hara, one of the most important underappreciated concepts. Chavetz Chaim saying it means that you can't believe it even in your heart. Shembach saying that's too much to ask for, but it means you can't act any differently towards them. And how we also saw those two possibilities in the Shulah's Tirosh V'Yisar. We posed the question, if somebody wants to tell you Lashon Hara about yourself, not knowing it's you, should you say, I don't want to hear, don't let them indulge them either, or should you say, no, I'll listen to it, and they will all accomplish and they'll love Van Alden, because no one's going to get hurt. And we talked about the question of Toelas. We know that sometimes it's an obligation to say stuff that's damaging if it's going to protect an innocent third party. And the question is why? Is it because it's not Lashon Hara at all, or is it because it is Lashon Hara, it's hurtful, but it's still outbalanced by the other half of the pasuk of Losam Adam Re'echa? And if that's the case, maybe there are cases where it's not outbalanced, like if the question is just saving somebody a few cents by telling them to abandon the store and go shop across the street. And I discussed also the question, can I say something negative to my class about somebody in order to inspire them? There, it's not coming from a perspective of Lashon Hara, but it is hurtful to a person. What if I say something without mentioning the name? It's not hurtful, but it's also nasty. And I combine the two of those to get ahead there, that if I'm going to say something inspirational without mentioning the name, then presumably it's mutter according to everybody, because it's not damaging and it's not nasty. And then we talked about why the Chavetz Chaim didn't get a haskama from the Rabbi Saul Salanter, because he seems to say that you have to ask mechila from somebody to speak Lashon Hara about. So Salanter said it can't be, that's an Ostvarim. So I don't want to sound my name to that at all. And we saw that probably most poskim seem to possibly like a Rishol Shalant during this, because it was Baran Chavis Red Tana, who probably, there's a lot of discussion, the Chavis Chaim maybe didn't mean exactly the way it sounds like. But in any event, the various dates is how to do this. A lot of Asher Mechila, either like around 12 dates, you should try to counteract it with positive information, or you should just avoid the severity to begin with, or you should ask a general Mechila without specifying what happened, and have them keep this opportunity. And it seems to be, again, there's two perspectives. Chavos Chaim is coming from the perspective of Midah, so at least you're reversing the Midah, while the Rishol Shalant is focusing on hurting someone's speech. So why hurt someone else's speech in order to avoid that possibility? And then we discussed the question of why we have a mitzvah of remembering Miriam. Why should that mitzvah, which the Ramban says is a real mitzvah, why should it be that this one or there gets a story about it that we have to remember? So as the Isaac Sher explains, because looking at how it's complicated territory, you could hurt somebody without realizing it, and a backlash from her applies even if you're saying something nice that comes out nasty. It's the only way to avoid it is to practice in advance, and that's what the Chiras Maisim Miriam is, and that's also why we have a practice of covering chalos, because you don't want to embarrass human beings, you have to face practice on inanimate objects. I mentioned that there's a extensive halachic discussion about how this not embarrassing lachalos plays out in some practical scenarios, and then we suggest that's why Rashi in the beginning of Shlach says that the reason the Meraglim was told after Miriam is because they should have learned the lesson, not that the Kal V'chomer, not that what they did is worse, but that the whole point of Maisa Miriam is that you have to practice, you have to prepare in advance, and to indulge this negativity right away is a complete betrayal of what Miriam was all about. Okay, so we are just in time for Maris, so we will stop there, and wish everybody a wonderful day.